Tim Nopum, welcome back to the KFGO studio.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for being with us. Whoa. And in the studio with us is not JJ Gordon. Abby Miller has stepped in. She's going to be helping take your phone calls and your text messages, so you can call in now for Mr. Fix-It, Tim Nopum, at 237-5948, 800-880-5346, or you can text us at 35270. Of course, I'm going to make a point of personal privilege and ask you some of my questions, too.
Yeah.
But first, let's start out with your with the study of your toilet.
Yeah, well, yeah. It is kind of an interesting story because, you know, I always heard from the water department that leaky flappers in toilets tend to use a lot of water. And I never really put much thought in it. But the other day, walking past our bathroom downstairs, I could hear the toilet sounding like it was filling. Well, certainly it was filling. And I thought, well, nobody flushed this toilet. Why is it filling? So I went and looked, and sure enough, the flapper, which is the little rubber stopper that holds the water in the tank between flushes. So when you flush it, the flapper opens, lets the water from the tank flush everything. And this particular one got dry and brittle enough that it was starting to leak a little bit of water by it, and it was trickling down. And so I watched it, and I'm a little OCD, so I thought, well, I'll just time this. And so it was 16 minutes between when it would start to refill. So it used, let enough water by that it would refill. And so every 16 minutes, which if you do the math on it, it's 3.5 times an hour, 90 times in 24 hours. And in a month, it's 2,700 times that it was refilling. And it wasn't a lot of water. So when it loses the water, the float says, oh, I need to put water in the tank. And so I thought, okay, how much water is going by between fills before it would refill? And so I dipped water out until it refilled about that same level, and it was about 10 ounces of water, which, again, doesn't seem like a lot. 10 ounces less than a can of water or a pop can of water or something.
Right.
But if you do that times 2,700 times in a month and then figure out how many ounces that is and how many gallons, I was 211 gallons of water.
Wow.
Flowing through this toilet as it just trickles by.
Right.
So that increases your water bill quite a bit and your sewer costs quite a bit for a $7 or an $8 flapper.
Right.
Yeah.
And relatively easy to install
by
yourself.
Very easy to install. It's a 5-minute deal to replace a rubber flapper. You just have to know if it's a 2-inch flapper or a 3-inch flapper because they have different sizes for different toilets. And a very simple process.
So let this be your call if you have a leaky toilet or you hear one that is filling often, because I think we have one of those too. I walked by the other day and thought, is that toilet running? Could it be anything else if you hear the toilet that's running consistently other than the flapper? Are there other things you should look for?
99% of the time it's going to be the flapper. If you look into the tank, the toilet itself, and you see the water, you know, something trickling down into the toilet bowl. And so that's coming from the tank. And typically the only way it gets there is past the stopper.
So that's what it is.
Yes.
Yeah. I have another question about the screws that slowly back out of your drywall and you see them kind of bubble.
Okay.
You had a word for it.
Yeah, they're called either nail pops or screw pops.
Okay.
Because that's what they are. Yeah.
So in our house, we had some of these in our stairwell, and we recently just kind of decided to, you know, take the spackle and just scrape it off, screw in the screw a little bit more, re-spackle, texturize, and paint over it. Now the question is, should we have re-screwed those back in, or should we have taken it out and maybe put a new or a longer screw in?
No, most of the time what happens with the nail pops is either a change in seasonal temperatures or moisture levels, or maybe the screws weren't quite far set in enough to begin with, and over time they tend to pop back out into the world.
Right.
And so you see that little rounded crown in the paint.
It drives you crazy.
Yeah, when you live there, you see it all the time. Maybe not all your company or guests see it, but you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just leave it alone and it's just a little pop or a little, you know, change in the texture, it's fine. But if you go and try to play with it or do something, pretty soon you do pop that plaster and that paint off. Now you have an exposed screw or a nail. And so, yeah, the best thing would be just take by hand a screwdriver, screw them in quite a bit, maybe even overindulge a little bit. Or if it's a nail, you can take a hammer and just pound it right in. And then it'll create a dent, you know, if it's a hammer.
Yep.
And then, yeah, you retexture or fill that with some compound or some type of wall patch or putty or something. And then when it dries up, then repaint it.
Oh, yep. There's a good toilet test we have in our text club here. Put food coloring in the tank and see if it shows up in the bowl.
Correct. That does work. Oh, yep. Yeah. If you're not using, some people have colored water in their tank because they'll put something in the tank itself.
Aren't those bad for you, though? Aren't those bad for your toilet?
I guess I haven't heard that for sure.
Okay.
I defer that to a plumber because they could cause early failure in the flappers if there's some chemicals, because the flappers are kind of a rubber, you know, material.
Right.
And so there's probably some products that aren't real compatible to that.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, you can put food coloring in there, and you can, if you see it trickling in your toilet, you know that your flapper's leaking.
I like that advice. Yeah. Good advice. I think you know that guy that texted that question.
I think I do. I'm surprised I haven't heard that advice yet.
Okay. And going back to the hole, now you've put a hole in your drywall.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You know, in this case, it was just a little screw hole. And so just patching over it with some spackle or whatever was easy.
Compounds and lots of, lots of joint compound stuff you can use.
Now the question is, at what size should you start patching? Because we've done that in our wall, too. We've used some, like, actual mesh and patched it up.
Right.
But what size is the hole that you need to start doing that?
A lot of times, if I had stuff that was smaller than maybe a silver dollar and not real deep, you know, if you put a doorknob through, then you have to patch it. And
yeah, that's obvious.
That happens quite often. But if it's just a smaller hole, you know, and not real deep, because if you get too deep with some of these holes, then sometimes a spackling compound, you put it in small little layers, because if you try to fill too much with at one time, it's going to dry and crack. And you do it in small layers, layer it in, let it dry, you know, 24 hours, put a little more in, put a little more, build it up, basically.
Oh, I gotcha. Yep. That's good advice. We are considering a board and batten project. Now, I don't know. Maybe there's another name for it. That's what they're calling it now. Where basically you're putting up board on your walls. So it almost looks like a wainscoting or a shiplap, but it's not that intense. It's just one board going horizontally and several vertically to create this space. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
Okay. You got my idea. Now, the question is, I am someone who changes my mind every 5 years on what I should want on my walls, right? I'm not the wallpaper kind of gal. I probably shouldn't be putting that up because it's coming down in 5 years. I'm sick of it by then. So how do I put this up effectively so that if I want to take it down in 5 to 10 years, I'm not going to destroy the wall? Because I imagine using like a construction glue and a nail gun, I'm going to take down the wall.
Right. Yeah. You know, that'd probably be the simplest and quickest way is use construction adhesive, put a little bit on and put it on the wall. And a lot of them have a pretty quick, you know, binding time. You
can
stick it on there, it'd probably stay. But then, like you're mentioning,
I'm
committed to that.
I'm committed.
Yeah. Because you pull that off, all that sheetrock, you know, outer coating and maybe parts of quite a bit. And then you've got a lot of patchwork to take care of.
Yeah.
Depending on the design or the layout of your batten strips and your wainscoting, whatever you'd like to call it, if it's long enough pieces, you start getting across some type of joist spacing or 2x4 spacing or tops and bottoms, it's certainly best to try to nail through and hit one of those, because the sheetrock itself, if you nail into a bare piece of sheetrock, it just doesn't have any holding power. And so I would try to make sure where your nailing is going to hit a stud.
Okay.
Or it's going to hit the top or bottom plates or something in there, depending on your layout. If you can't do that, then you might have to look at some other sort of wall anchor that would hold it. And whether it be some small screws with plastic anchors in the sheetrock. Again,
that might be enough.
Yeah. You can take, when you take those off, you'd still have those plastic anchors, but they're fairly small and you can get rid of those and patch those with spackling.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I should probably just commit or not commit is what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's a lot to ask from you.
I know. It's a lot to ask for something on my wall because I like to change that up a lot. someone said the water meter may not shut off either, and then you have water running down the overflow tube. Are we referring to the toilet again here?
Yeah, he's probably not talking about the water meter. He's probably talking about the fill valve itself.
Oh, okay.
So if your float is not working properly, or the shutoff, when the tank fills up, the float is supposed to shut the valve completely. And sometimes as that fill valve gets old, it just keeps flowing in, and then it goes down the overflow tube into your tank. But at that point, you'd need a new fill valve.
Got it.
And that's a little different procedure. And that's still, most of them are fairly doable by most homeowners. And again, a lot of great
quick
YouTube
search.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotta love YouTube.
But, you know, if you're not comfortable with it, just call a plumber, because they do them blindfolded and can come out and whip it out real quick and done. Yeah.
If you have any questions for Mr. Fix-It, Tim Noteboom, Mr. Fix-It is in the house until 2 o'clock. It is Mr. Fix-It, Tim Noteboom on KFGO. This is an interesting question, Tim. Not one that I've ever thought about, but how do you get gum off of concrete?
Wow.
Got any remedies for that?
Gum off of concrete.
I don't know, but we used peanut butter in my hair when I was little. I remember that.
And there's lots of things, you know, like hairsprays and
oh yeah,
some type of alcohols will break down gums.
Or oil.
Some oils might. I would guess that you could actually Google that one, and it's going to tell you exactly what to do, because I know there's lots of those remedies for different items. And
I think I feel like the last time we were talking about gum in people's hair, someone mentioned egg whites. And I don't know if that actually works, but
I hadn't heard of that one. No.
You could try it. Try the egg whites. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know the exact one for gum on concrete, but I would guess there's got to be one.
Now that it is spring, maybe we're getting a little bit of moisture. When we come back, you want to talk sump pumps?
Yeah, okay. That would be a good
Sounds
one.
Good. And we'll take any more. I see some questions coming into 35270. We'll take those as well, and your phone calls when we come back. It is Mr. Fix-It on KFGO. It is Mr. Fix-It on KFGO. Tim Noteboom is joining us in studio and taking your questions. Back to the text club for just a moment. Someone wants your thoughts on an electric tankless water heater. No NG or LP available. House is 4,800 square feet, 2 floors, no basement. 400 amp service, just 2 of us there, both work daytime. Thoughts on tankless water heaters?
Yeah, tankless water heaters are, you know, were kind of a new thing, you know, not that many years ago. And the thought process behind it is you aren't constantly heating this 40, 50, or 80 gallons of water. So as far as an energy savings, that was kind of the criteria or the plan behind it. And a lot of them work well. And I say that because I think they work well with smaller households. Once you start getting a full family and doing all that kind of stuff, you might as well just have a full, you know, full blown water heater and not deal with it. But if it's just 2 people living there, I wouldn't be concerned about a 400 amp service, because that's a fairly large service for a house. And unless your electric draw is that heavy, there should be plenty of space, for a tankless water heater. So I do think there's a spot for them, and this might be one of them.
Yeah. So it sounds like the electric tankless water heater isn't for everyone, but might be for them.
I think, for this application and 2 people, I think it might be a good plan.
Someone else says, just bought a new house, no basement, only a crawl space. There are vents in the crawl space, but I don't know when they should be open or closed.
Okay. Typically they vent crawl spaces to, mostly try to get rid of moisture, because they can be damp places. And so they should typically be closed in the wintertime, because you don't want cold air underneath there, especially if you've got exposed heating ducts or water pipes, because we don't want those freezing or something. So if I had a crawl space and I had vents in it, probably the only time I would open them is time periods in the spring and the fall. And if there's a few summer periods where the humidity levels are pretty low, because we don't want more humidity going in than what's coming out.
Right.
Yep. So look for those low humidity periods. If there's a month that's better than the rest, or a few weeks here and there, to get some air movement underneath there, because you do want to dry the crawl space out and keep it dry. Just don't introduce any humidity into it.
Someone says, changing toilet valve and stopper, is it a good idea to change tank bolts also?
Okay, tank bolts, they're talking about the bolts that actually hold the water tank onto the base of the toilet.
Oh, okay.
Yep, not the ones that hold to the floor.
Right.
And so those bolts would hold the tank on, and in between the tank and the base is a donut-type gasket. And unless you're having a problem with that gasket leaking, I don't think there's any reason to change the bolts. A lot of times they get pretty rusty and corroded, so when you go to try to take them off, they can be a real bugger. So unless there's a reason to change it, I wouldn't do it out of necessity, because you can change the valve, the fill valve and the flappers and all those kind of things without taking the tank apart.
We'll continue to take your questions at 35270. You can also call Tim at 237-5948. It is sump pump season, too, so we should probably mention those.
Right. You know, it's been really dry. You know, my sump pump is one that typically runs off and on most of the winter, actually. And then certainly in the spring and most of the summer, mine runs a lot. And it has not run at all yet this year. And so it might really be a sign that we're really dry, and everybody knows that by looking outside.
Yeah.
But I think down deep, it's still very dry. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't look at our sump pumps. Perhaps put some water in the pit if there's none in there to test it. Because what's going to happen is you'll be gone for the weekend, and there'll be a 3 or 4 inch rain or maybe more, and all of a sudden it's going to need to go, and you won't be there to make sure it's working. So take a 5 gallon bucket of water or a garden hose or something and start putting a bunch of water in there. Make sure it pumps decently, nice and even sound, doesn't get any grinding noises, things like that. And so it works properly, so that way you're prepared. And if you got a battery backup, check that battery and test that one too.
Yeah. Someone texted in and said, should laundry rooms have an electric fan exhaust?
Most don't. Not that it wouldn't be a good idea, because laundry rooms are typically moist. And so the reason you'd want a fan exhaust similar to a bathroom is to get rid of moisture.
Oh, sure.
And but you're not going to find too many houses that actually have a fan, a bathroom fan or exhaust vent in the laundry room. But not that it wouldn't be a good idea.
Sure.
I think it would be.
I always sort of like the moisture that comes from my laundry room, only because I think it cuts down on having to use a humidifier sometimes, because it's right beside our bedrooms. You know, there's a bathroom there where there's shower going, and then the laundry room.
Right.
I always feel like it doesn't feel as dry in my house.
Right. Yeah. And that would be a wintertime thing. You wouldn't want the excess humidity in the summer, obviously.
Right. True.
But in the wintertime, if your house is super dry and you get static shocks walking around on the carpet, or you get, you know, bloody noses or dry, itchy skin, you're probably a little dry. And so a little excess humidity wouldn't hurt in the wintertime. So. And, you know, we always talk about this time of year, maybe next time, about air exchangers, because everybody's got questions.
Oh,
on
yes.
Those.
The air exchangers.
Because that brings up that same thing. We talk about humidity. So now's the time to, if you want to turn off that air exchanger, or you can still run it for a little bit because there's good dry air outside to get some fresh air in the house. But once we start getting to summer, then we want to typically turn off those air exchangers, because we don't want that moist air being brought into the house.
There's the answer to a question that just came in. Should I run my air exchanger year-round?
Look at there. Yeah. So, air exchangers typically are run in the wintertime, fall, you know, late fall through, you know, early spring, to dry down the house and get fresh air in the house. Once we get to a summer season, air exchangers, when they're running, like I said, they're going to draw fresh air in, but a lot of times that air from outside is going to be very humid, damp air, and we don't really want to introduce that to the house at all. We want to, you know, there's going to be enough fresh air from, you know, windows open here and there, doors opening more often than wintertime, so we're going to get plenty of fresh air in the house, so we don't want to introduce any more by having an air exchanger running all summer long.
So there's the answer to that question. Dryer vents. I just wanted to mention that we just cleaned ours out. Wow. That needed to be done. That's kind of scary when you do that, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Typically can be pretty shocking, especially if you have any if part of your vent is that corrugated, accordion looking stuff.
Yep.
All those little ripples tend to collect more lint than a smooth tin or aluminum line. And so the more of that corrugated dryer vent you have, the more apt you are to get it full of lint.
Yeah, so, that plastic corrugated one, you're right, it does. They used to be like silver, right?
Yep, you can still get those and metal ones and you can bend them. Yep, they're a little flexible, but and they're actually a metal tin or aluminum. I'm not sure what the actual makeup of them are. But yeah, they're smooth wall.
Right.
And they trap less lint.
Yeah.
So
now that you mention it, I'm like, wow, we should maybe switch to one of those.
Yeah, and yeah, usually the connection between your dryer and the wall has to be some sort of flexible thing. So you can mm-hmm. pull the dryer out and clean underneath the floor yep. or service it. So that part, you can buy a new piece of that, you know, relatively inexpensively and replace those. And that should just be something you should maybe do every couple of years.
Sure.
The rest of it, yeah, you'd have to clean out or hire someone to clean out the rest or blow it out.
Yeah. We, our neighbor has a big attachment that yep. he can clean it out with. Yep. Yeah.
Little brush that yep. Some of them you put on drills.
Yep.
Some that
put yep. on a drill. Yep.
Yep. And you just go in there and turn it on and it just beats up the vent and
yep.
and then you run it a little bit and it just blows all that stuff out. You can also use shop vacs, whether you're on the outside sucking it out or if on the inside, reverse it and blow it out.
Yeah, we did both. Yep. We did a little bit of both.
Yeah, see, you're yeah. all over it.
Yeah. Oh, well, we needed to be. There was a lot. It was kind of scary, to be honest.
So if your dryer starts to take, you know, excessively longer times to dry clothes, that's typically a sign you've got the restriction in the venting. So that hot, moist air isn't leaving as fast as it should. And so instead of taking a half hour to dry a load, it might be 40 minutes.
You're right. It did feel more efficient after we did it.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep. Absolutely.
Let's get to the phone lines. Greg, you have a question about air purifiers. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. Back in middle of February, we put in one of these units from a local plumbing company. It's called an I-Wave. I-Wave, like I for Iowa and then dash wave. We put one of these air purifiers in. It was about $700. And, of course, you know, it was brutally cold during that stretch in February. And then, of course, it got greatly warmer afterwards. And really haven't had it in long enough. Of course, then the weather turned this unseasonably mild. I haven't really had it long enough to really make a judge. It's supposed to really clean up the air and allergens and pollen and mold and all this good stuff. What have you heard? Have you heard much about these units? They're not cheap. And then it's a little kind of a black box, and it goes in the bottom of your, in my case, the gas forced air furnace, and it's right next to where the air filter comes in from the cold air return, and then the cold air return comes in there, and it's supposed to zap all this stuff, and then it feeds the furnace, you know, with from the cold air return up into the hot air ducts, and haven't really had it long enough to notice if there's been a lot better quality air breathing. You know, hopefully it kills COVID stuff too, who knows. But what have you heard about this product? Maybe you can look it up for next time, and I'll hang up and listen, sir.
All right. Well, thank you, Greg. You know, the iWave ones, they are basically an attachment that would go on your furnace, and they've got, you know, a filter system in them, and I'm not sure whether it's a washable filter or replaceable filter, but you know, I think probably there's probably a spot for them, especially if you have sensitive people in the house, if they've got allergies or maybe asthma, things like that. You know, whether or not they're the cat's meow and all this stuff, that I don't know. I haven't any direct, you know, contact with any of these things. And so I know that, they do get some fairly good reviews from people, but again, they're going to be probably an individual type product for people. They're probably not for everybody, and for the cost of that, there's probably better options out there for maybe just upgrading your filter on the furnace itself, because there's different levels of furnace filters with HEPA filters and allergens mm-hmm. and things like that that might help the average person without investing a lot of money. But hopefully it works well for you. It'd be nice to hear in a year if you're getting the results that you're expecting from this.
Definitely. Someone says, I know someone who vents their dryer into the garage. I think this is a bad idea, right?
Yes, we kind of talked about that off the air just a little bit. But yeah, and years ago, Well, my grandparents would do that in their basement. They didn't want to force any of this hot air outside, so they would put a nylon over the end of the vent and duct the dryer right in the basement because it's free heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But typically that moist air is the stuff we don't want in the house.
Right.
Or especially in the garage, too. We just don't want to do that because it's going to start attaching to the sheetrock and everything else, and pretty soon we could have some mold concerns and things. So,
someone else wants to know, does duct cleaning really work? Thought that's what my furnace filter was for.
Well, your furnace filter does, you know, and if you change it regularly, you know, once it starts getting plugged up or having other problems, it's not going to clean like it should. So we'll start with that. So change it often. But yes, duct cleaning, especially once you get a furnace or a system that's 10 plus years old, it's not something you need to do in 2 years or 5 years or something. But once you start getting out there 10, 12 years, there tends to be a lot of stuff collected in the ductwork. You know, fibers from carpets, hairs, if there's been pets in the house, the pet dander is going to be pretty heavy in there. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to end up in there. So if you're looking at buying a house, a used house that's never had duct cleaning, it might be something to consider having done when you move in, or maybe ask the sellers if they've had pets. Maybe you can get the sellers to participate in some of that for you. So it definitely is worthwhile.
Sure. Just not on a yearly basis.
No. Yeah. No, I think every, you know, 8-10 years would be great plenty.
Perfect. Tim Noboom is our mixer. Fix it. We're going to wrap things up when we come back here on KFGO.